The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Now, loyal listeners will recall that I live in Oregon, the first state in the United States to decriminalize the simple possession of most currently illegal drugs. The first of many, hopefully all. Well, the city of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, has joined suit and has taken a giant step towards decriminalizing simple possession of most currently illegal drugs. On Wednesday, November 25th, the Vancouver City Council's Standing Committee of Council on City Finance and Services met to discuss a motion to ask the federal government for an exemption from the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act in order to decriminalize personal possession of illicit substances within the city's boundaries for medical purposes in order to address urgent public health concerns caused by the overdose crisis and COVID-19. We're going to hear some of that hearing on today's show. First, let's hear from Annie Foreman-Mackey. She's a first-year medical student at the University of British Columbia.
Okay. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Annie Foreman-Mackey, and I am currently a first-year medical student at UBC. I'm here speaking on behalf of over 75 medical students in Vancouver who signed on in support for Motion B4 to allow the City of Vancouver to apply for an exemption under Section 56 of the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act to decriminalize possession of controlled substances for personal use for all people in the City of Vancouver. You should have all received my letter yesterday. I heard back from a few of you, and I just wanted to run through some of the major points that I wanted to highlight. So we've already heard from so many incredible speakers today sharing their wisdom and experiences, and I know that you are all very familiar with the statistics pointing to continued and tragic increases in overdose and drug toxicity deaths. Today, BC communities face dual crises with the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbating existing health, social, and economic inequities. It is very clear that the war on drugs has failed and that criminalization only serves to increase harm, further entrench stigma, and create more barriers to accessing health and social services for people who use drugs. Criminalization causes negative health outcomes and disproportionately impacts Black, Indigenous, and other racialized, marginalized, and already over-policed communities. It fuels a toxic, illegal drug market and brings about significant economic costs. So as medical students, we're committed to building the skills necessary to protect the health of and serve the needs of all British Columbians in the coming years. As such, we're invested in ensuring that our patients, family, friends, and loved ones live in an environment that supports health rather than incites harm. As future healthcare providers, we are committed to meeting people where they are at, being inclusive, and seeking to reduce barriers to accessing essential health and social services. Health is a fundamental human right. Though admittedly very early in my own medical training, my peers and I are already seeing firsthand the negative impacts of criminalization on the health and well-being of our patients. Drug use is a health concern, not a criminal justice issue, and our collective strategies must reflect this. It is long overdue to pursue decriminalization of drugs for personal possession as a means to reduce the harms associated with criminalization and move towards a public health approach to drug policy. We therefore ask members of council to immediately support this motion to decriminalize personal possession of controlled substances within the city of Vancouver. Well, this is only one piece of a comprehensive approach to substance use, and we ultimately want to see federal law reform. It is within your power as council to take immediate action to minimize the harms of criminalization within our community. I'll echo what other speakers have eloquently said already about the necessity of full decriminalization without added punitive measures. It is also essential that people who use drugs are central in the decision-making process at every step of the way in designing and implementing this strategy. We hope that in passing this motion and by taking meaningful steps away from harmful prohibitionist policies towards evidence-based, health-oriented approaches to drug use, Vancouver sets a positive precedent for the rest of BC and Canada as a whole. Thank you.
That was Annie Foreman Mackey, a first-year medical student at the University of British Columbia. She appeared at a Vancouver, BC City Council meeting and spoke in favor of a motion to request an exemption from the Canadian federal government in order to allow the City of Vancouver to decriminalize simple possession of drugs. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Now, let's hear from Donald McPherson. He's the executive director of the Canadian Drug Policy Coalition and a leading figure in Canadian drug policy. Previously, he served for 22 years as the drug policy coordinator for the City of Vancouver.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. It's a pleasure to be addressing you on such an interesting and what I think is a truly exciting motion. And I congratulate you on behalf of the Canadian Drug Policy Coalition, a coalition of over 50 organizations across Canada advocating drug policies based on public health, human rights, evidence, and social inclusion, for having the courage to have this discussion at this time of a dual public health emergencies. The coalition is based within the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University, and we wish to support Mayor Stewart's motion. The coalition acknowledges and adopts the submissions made to council by the HIV/AIDS Legal Network, the Van Duy Pivot Legal Society on this matter. Those submissions set out the evidence and rationale for decriminalization and the manner in which decriminalization could be most effective at enhancing public health and supporting human rights. Specifically, our coalition recommends that no administrative sanctions, involuntary interventions, or other punitive measures be put in place with decriminalization for the reasons outlined in their submission. I would also like to remind Council that there have been significant number of calls for decriminalization over the years. In 1994, Vince Kane, BC's chief coroner at the time, called for a commission to be set up to explore how to implement decriminalization of small amounts of drugs for personal use. It was during the beginning of the overdose crisis of the 90s, which was devastating. He understood how wasteful in terms of time, money, and lives that the practice of criminalizing people who use drugs was. Coroner Kane was one of the strongest voices at the time in calling for the reallocation of funds from the criminal justice system to fund health and social approaches to drugs. He clearly saw we were spending so many resources in the wrong area. There are 170 organizations listed on the submission from the HIV Legal Network, but I do want to highlight a few, including the Canadian Mental Health Association, the Canadian Public Health Association, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, the Health Officers Council of BC, Chief Medical Health Officer of BC, Vancouver Coastal Health, Toronto Public Health, and Montreal Public Health, as well as BC's Chief Coroner. Support certainly within the public health community and now the policing community is stronger than ever. For the coalition, we've made our two top priority policy goals, working towards achieving decriminalization of all currently illegal substances for personal use, and eventually the legal regulation of all drugs. We see decriminalization as a critical first step in a process of extracting ourselves from an outdated policy framework, prohibition, created in the early part of the 19th century, imbued with colonial values, and one that has for all of these years prescribed severe punishments and stigmatization under the criminal law for simple use of a so-called controlled substance. As a foundation of our public policy in the area of drugs, it has been an abysmal and catastrophic public policy failure, and today's update from the Chief Coroner is yet another tragic reminder of the severe harm it continues to create. I agree with the wise words of Karen Ward and others who have spoken earlier when they advise governments to work with people who use drugs to best understand how policy impacts the very people whose lives are most at risk. We urge you to pass this motion, and we will work with other processes in the future, whether it be provincial and at the federal level, to ensure that decriminalization remains in its purest form, removing an extremely harmless policy off of the shoulders of people who use substances. Earlier, one of the counselors was asking what more the city could do, because some people have said decriminalization is not going far enough. Recommendation 24 of the city's prevention strategy, preventing harm from psychoactive substances, passed in 2005. You could take this up, perhaps wait a few weeks after we get through this round. And it calls that the federal government initiate a process of reviewing Canada's legislative, regulatory, and policy frameworks governing illegal drugs with regard to their effectiveness in preventing and reducing harm from problematic drug use and their effectiveness in enabling municipalities to better address the harm from the sale and use of these substances at the local level, and establish a process with broad participation to consider regulatory alternatives to the current policy of prohibition for currently illegal drugs. That would be a wonderful next step, to pick up that recommendation from 2005 and begin to work towards that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. McPherson. I thought we had Chair DeGenova back, but...
And
here she is.
I am back now, I think. Can you hear me now? Thanks. I've just switched over the cellular network, hoping that's a little bit better. And I know that we had some council members with questions. I believe Councillor Swanson was first. Is that correct?
Yeah. Thank you, Donald, for your presentation. The first thing I wanted to ask is, could you email us this initiative that you just quoted so that we'll have the exact wording and want to make a motion?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, great. And the second thing is something I talked to you about earlier, is that the motion says that we're asking to decriminalize personal possession for medical purposes. And I'm just wondering if you think it's okay that it says for medical purposes in there, in case someone gets stopped and the person that's stopping them thinks that they aren't using the drugs for medical purposes, would they be arrested?
No, I don't think that would be the case. We would prefer to have seen it for purposes in the public that were in the public interest, which is the third way an exemption can be approved. That's broader, but I'm not. If that's possible, that would be a good amendment to the motion. I guess our concern, I think we have the same concern that you do, in that we would prefer for decriminalization to be a blanket removal of criminalization. This is a harmful policy we're trying to remove from the environment. And we believe there's good evidence that when removed, it will help to change the behavior of people who use substances in terms of accessing services, police, the way they interact with people who use substances, and citizens who no longer grow up with the stigmatizing policy framework teaching them about substances and people who use them. The Portuguese were very clear that a foundation of their approach is decriminalization. It's the very building block of what they're trying to do there.
Okay, thank you. That's great.
Thanks. And Mayor Stewart.
Thanks so much. Yep. Again, thank you very much, Mr. McPherson, for calling in today and for all your work on this file. I'm just wondering if we can call on you if this motion passes to help us think about implementing how this might move forward, and if you'll continue your advocacy with us if this motion passes with the federal government.
Oh, absolutely. And I did. I want to applaud the city because in drug policy at a global level, and we're involved in international work, change happens from the ground up. And municipalities were integral to changes made in Switzerland, Germany, the Netherlands, Spain, in the 80s and 90s. So municipalities really, I know sometimes people say, well, this is not our jurisdiction, or people have said to me, well, what's it mean? They're just going to write a letter. Yeah, that's true. But they're also taking a stand, and they're taking a stand that's grounded in years of experience, experiential learning about policies that aren't working. So I really applaud the courage of you, Mr. Mayor, and council, who have struggled so hard over the years to push forward towards a better outcome for all of us.
Thanks very much for your time this evening, and as always.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And I have some questions for you, if that's all right. I'm just going to start my own timer here. And my first question, let me just advance myself there. My first question, thanks so much for making the time to speak on this, and thank you for your work. We wouldn't be as far, I know we're not as far along as we need to be, but wouldn't be this far along without you, Mr. McPherson. I just wanted to say that first. And then my question was about specifically sort of looking at criminalization, and I did hear your presentation. Is there any concern for you that, I mean, personal possession is one thing, trafficking is something completely different. I know Portugal and their model, they're very clear about what is allowed for personal possession. And it's a 10-day supply, and they have it outlined by grams. Do you think that that's important to draw a line between that? I mean, we heard from Vancouver Coastal Health before when we'd asked about decriminalization on another matter. They did show us how it kind of linked to other activity and the people on the other side of that. Not suggesting that's a law and order issue right here and right now in this, but do you think it's important that we define what personal possession is? Or does that not matter at all here? If I can ask.
So, I think it's an important issue, and I would weigh in on it after the health authority has sat down and done some serious work on this. The threshold issue is an important one. I think we would probably look at a threshold as a floor. So if you have an under a certain amount, then you're clearly, it's very clear that this is not a criminal offense. But not if you're over a certain amount. I think there are lots of people whose use varies in terms of the rates of use, who may be having a larger supply than others because they only purchase once in a while. They live in a remote place. There's all sorts. It's really complicated, and we don't want to make it worse for people. I know Vancouver Coastal Health is going to sit down and wrestle with these issues and come up with some options.
Okay, and I only have about 20 seconds left, but we've heard some criticisms of the Portugal model, and while no model is going to be perfect, do you think that there's some things we could learn and implement there from Portugal as well?
No, absolutely. We can learn a lot from Portugal. They implemented it in 2001. That was a long time ago. So they were constrained by the thinking 20 years ago. This is 2020.
And I'm so sorry to stop you, but that's my time. And as chair, I have to hold myself to the same, if not a higher standard. But Councillor Hardwick has questions for you, and maybe she'll ask one that continues on. Let me hear that answer, but I'm not sure if she will. We'll see. Councillor Hardwick.
Sorry, I'm going in another direction. Can you hear me?
Figured you might be.
Yep.
Yes, of course.
Yep.
Great, thank you. I believe what the interest here is in finding balance. And through decriminalizing drugs, that's a step towards a larger balance. With the intent of removing harm from the drug user. How do you balance that with any harm that might be done directly, intentionally or not intentionally, to people affected by the drug user?
Well, I think by removing harm from people who use drugs, we're helping the whole community. Decriminalization will help people who need services access those services. It will save resources on addressing
possession of illegal substances, right?
Yeah, people.
So that's removed. Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. No problem. It's an interesting question. So many resources are wasted. For example, in Portugal, 75% of the visits to the dissuasion committees are for cannabis users. So many, many people do not end up going to those dissuasion committees. That's one of the critiques of their system. I guess if criminalization is the other parts of decriminalization, and the motion I read at the end from an old city report really gets at the harms to other people in the community, in the sense that the robust and enduring criminal market is propagated by the criminalization of substances and the creation of the illegal markets. That's where the right. harm people come from.
So removing the pushers and the criminal aspect of buying and selling of drugs is removed. I get that. I appreciate it. I'm totally straight with that. There are other outcomes of that I'm trying to balance out in understanding this. And I know I only get 3 minutes now, but I appreciate your helping me understand.
Well, I'm not sure if I have, but happy to talk another time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Apologies. I just got a text from Councillor DeGenova. She's still having problems, so it's Vice Chair Fry here. I'll just advance Councillor Kirby-Young next on the queue.
Thanks, Councillor Fry. Thanks, Mr. McPherson, for being here and speaking. I heard an interview that you did last week, I think it was, on Global TV, and it was compelling to me because you talked about a broad range of measures that you felt were necessary in terms of sort of thinking just beyond decriminalization and sort of said that, you know, we de facto, we have that here. There's a benefit, certainly in terms of stigma and formalization of it. But you spoke about things like access to treatment, but I also thought I heard you mention access to work programs and that. And I was curious about that, and if you could expand further on it.
Well, I know it's, money and work are two problems when you're a heavily stigmatized person who's been sort of shut out of society. And living in a criminalized environment. So I know in Europe there are a variety of programs for people to gain meaningful work, and that's another way of eliminating or reducing stigma and ensuring that people have funds to move towards a different state of well-being should they choose to. So there's a lot of substance use. The majority of substance use is not problematic substance use, and that criminalization for those people is also not a good thing for our society. So There depends on who you're talking about, really. If you're talking about people who present and self-identify as people who are looking for help, looking for housing, looking for employment, all of these things add up to a sort of holistic approach for people. What we need is a wide array of opportunities for people to engage in.
Is there a particular European example of a country or initiative that's sort of really focused on work programs or something that you would cite or suggest as a good one to?
Well, the city of Frankfurt had some interesting work programs that that were in the area of gardening and landscaping and planting trees and those sorts of programs. Amsterdam has done some work at the municipal level as well. And I know the Portuguese were very clear about social assistance and connecting people to various workforces. So I could look around and see if I could find something for you.
Yeah, no, that would be terrific. I'd love to read more about those. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here to speak.
Okay, thank you.
That was Donald McPherson, the executive director of the Canadian Drug Policy Coalition. He was testifying before the Vancouver, BC City Council's Standing Committee on City Finance and Services on a motion to ask the federal government for an exemption from the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act in order to decriminalize personal possession of illicit substances within the city's boundaries for medical purposes in order to address urgent public health concerns caused by the overdose crisis and COVID-19. Following this hearing, the committee approved the motion unanimously. Following that, the committee adjourned, the city council itself was called to order, and the city council adopted the motion. Now, it's up to the Canadian federal government.
Well, I ask you to consider, if this is affirmed, and if the Board of Regents are the Board of Directors, and if President Kerr, in fact, is the manager, and I tell you something, the faculty are a bunch of employees, and we're the raw materials. But we're a bunch of raw materials that don't mean to be have any process upon us, don't mean to be made into any product, don't mean to end up being bought by some clients of the university, be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings. There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Be sure to check out Dean's new video project, Claiming the Moral High Ground. Find links at drugtruth.net or search for Becker's Buds and Claiming the Moral High Ground on YouTube. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are also on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give its page a like and share it with friends. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.